Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is it possible to know the people on your street without knowing their politics? With campaign signs sprouting like technicolor mushrooms across North Texas lawns these days, you might know more about your neighbor's political leanings than about their kids or their careers. And maybe that's why you moved there in the first place, or why the people next door did. Because demographic studies show that for the past four decades, we have been sorting ourselves geographically in America into communities with ever more homogenized views. But while it might sound like a formula for avoiding conflict, my guest today worries it is pushing many Americans toward extremist ideas and preventing many of us from even considering opposing viewpoints. Journalist Bill Bishop is a former special projects reporter for the Austin American Statesman. His new book, written in collaboration with sociologist and statistician Robert Cushing, is called The Big Sort: Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Bill, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Robert Putnam, of course, wrote about bowling alone. These days, it sounds like we're bowling with clones. How do we resemble our neighbors?
Well, it's more along the lines of the way we live and what we want out of life. And it's interesting. It's funny little things. I was on a show in Minneapolis, and I had three people call in 1 hour saying that they knew that they were in the wrong neighborhood politically because their neighbors used lawn chemicals and they didn't. And so it's that kind of thing. But those kinds of lifestyle choices end up every 4 years having a political consequence.
And it puts us into what you call a giant feedback loop.
Yeah, you tend to hear reinforcement of your belief. And in fact, we seek that out. We seek it out in the newspapers that we read and the websites that we go to and the television shows that we listen to and watch. And then we're surrounded by it. We hear the jokes from the neighbors or in our churches. Churches are probably more politically segregated than our neighborhoods, and so we hear the arguments that support our point of view, and so we feel even more strongly in what we believe.
I guess the reason people are taken by surprise by some of this is that we've talked for so long about, or not for so long, but for the past several years about red states and blue states, but you actually found this can be boiled down not just county by county, but neighborhood by neighborhood.
Oh yeah, I mean the states only have meaning really when it comes to counting electoral college votes, but I mean you can look at I know Austin. I mean my neighborhood. I'm in the middle of a red state, and my neighborhood is probably 9-1 Democratic. And inner city Dallas County is different from the suburban counties, right? And growing more so. That's what surprised us is when we looked at the numbers. It wasn't surprising to us that people were self-segregating or self-selecting to be around others like themselves, but that with all our education and our incomes and our ease of transportation, that we're using those opportunities to sequester ourselves further.
Do people realize that they're making these choices deliberately, or is it just a matter of you drive down a street and see that people are or are not using lawn chemicals, whichever happens to be your preference, and then you feel like you'll fit in there?
Right. I think it's more of that, although, I said it was always that. It was always people looking around and just getting a vibe from a neighborhood or a city and, seeing what was in the shops or in the bookstores or what kind of stores were on the street and what the houses look like. But I've talked to enough people now over the last couple of months who tell me that they explicitly look for places where they will be in the political majority. But I think it's primarily a lifestyle choice that then translates into a political choice.
Do people want to be in the majority because they want to feel like they're winning, or is it a matter of having seen so much strife in the media and among professional politicians that they just don't want to have to engage in that?
Well, I think what people want to be around others like themselves and always have. What hasn't always been the case is that those lifestyle choices now align with political parties so strongly. But I do think now people, I've talked to enough people who say, yeah, I want to be in the place where what I believe can be enacted. But I think there's something else going on, too. If you're around other people like yourself, the books you want will be in the store. The movies that you want to see will be in the movie theaters. The bands that you want to hear will be playing at either the church or the club down the street. And so there's a market reason for you to be around people like you, because you'll get more of the kind of stuff that you want.
What's so fascinating about this bill is that you and Robert Cushing did not go into this project looking for political divisions necessarily. You were interested in economic variation.
Oh, yeah. We were interested in why places like Austin and Dallas and Denver and Seattle and Portland, Oregon, were doing so much better economically than other places. And we could see that every time we looked at how these high-tech cities were doing better, we could see that there was people were sorting. In 1970, people with BA degrees, college degrees, were evenly distributed around the country. But over the next 30 years, they began to sort themselves into particular places. So Dallas and Austin picked up a lot of people with BA degrees, and Cleveland and my old hometown of Louisville lost. And so the economies were changing. And it was only after we saw that the economies were changing did we begin to look to see whether the politics were changing along with it.
And now, when we have the option to move, people might have five or six neighborhoods to choose from that are within their economic grasp. So then they'll decide according to lifestyle and politics.
Sure. Sure. Oh, yeah.
Bill Bishop is my guest. His new book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. You point to the mid-60s as the starting point for this phenomenon. Can you talk about what was going on then that caused people to start this process?
Well, when I began to look back and to see when this began, there were just a confluence of events that happened in 1965, as a matter of fact, that showed that society was kind of coming apart. People began dropping out of parties. People began to lose trust in government officials. People began to drop out of mainline churches. Mainline churches, Presbyterians and Lutherans, have been gaining membership for 200 years, but beginning in 1965 and continuing on, they began to drop out. So it seemed to us that society was kind of coming unraveled, and when it came back together again, it didn't come back together as a nation. It came back together as these smaller communities of like-minded groups.
To what extent do our political values correlate to the way we live? I mean, a lot of people would say that there is a set of values that all Americans share, and yet the ways we choose to spend our money and spend our time can be very different according to what our political values are.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was just reading this week and stuff I didn't read for the book, but social psychologists are trying to decide what's the difference between a liberal and a conservative, and Sam Gosling at University of Texas has published some papers where he finds that when you look at major personality dimensions, liberals differ from conservatives in two ways, on two of those dimensions. One is wanting new experiences, and two, conscientiousness. And conscientiousness correlates with being a conservative, and wanting to experience new things is a liberal trait. And in fact, those people are concentrated in particular places. And what we found in The Big Sort was that, in fact, in places like Dallas and Austin and Portland and Seattle, an increasing number of people who want to experience new things, to explore new ideas, people like that were moving there. And in fact, those places were becoming increasingly democratic.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We will go to the phones and speak to Steve in Euless. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
Fantastic, beautiful day. I have talked about this with my friends for years, and I am blessed to live in a neighborhood that is economically and racially mixed here in Euless, and it's a marvelous neighborhood. But I call it the balkanization of society. And where there are fewer and fewer places for us to join and moderate and come to a solution as neighbors, friends, individuals, and the community, then, we start getting polarized because we listen to MSNBC or we listen to Fox News. Looking back at the 60s, I think one of the major triggers was busing and race, because the public schools no longer were the place where we all got together in one spot. And it takes a social upheaval like the Depression, where everyone's in the same kettle of fish, to to bring people together, or an economic crisis like we are now. And I'd like to get the reaction of your wonderful guest.
Thanks for your call.
Steve is really, it's interesting how we see this in our lives, and just as Steve so eloquently describes, and in fact, I think that is, I don't know if the lack of what Americans lack now are any common experiences. We don't all watch Walter Cronkite on or Huntley Brinkley on television. We don't read. When I grew up in Kentucky, everyone read the Louisville newspaper from one end of the state to another. It was the common thing that we did. And those experiences are disappearing. And so, in fact, Steve is right. We don't have those common experiences anymore. And we don't overlap in important ways with others. And it is becoming this balkanized society, just as he described.
I wonder if it's any sign of progress whatsoever that if we are choosing to sort of segregate ourselves by neighborhood, at least these days race and ethnicity are not the primary driver of that.
Well, yeah, we at first we thought there are all these statistical methods you can use to measure segregation. And so we measured segregation, Democrats from Republicans, at the county level over between 1970 and 2000, and that measure increased by 50%. When we measured black versus white segregation at the county level between 1970 and 2000, we actually became slightly less segregated. We became more integrated racially, even as we're becoming more segregated politically.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Alice in Southlake. Hello, Alice.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Very interesting topic. We've experienced the phenomenon described by the author. Throughout the United States, we have been transferred corporately from Alabama to Iowa to Wisconsin to California and now to Texas.
Wow.
And the part of this that is becoming alarming to me, I'm assuming that most of your research applies to adults. We have found specifically here in Southlake, Texas, and the name that I just gave you is not my name because of what I'm about to tell you, the visceral nature of the responses, the interpersonal responses to people who don't conform to the norm prescribed by the society is becoming almost dangerous, and it's specifically with my children. In this election cycle, there have been various discussions in the classroom, in this school system, that the kids are supposed to be able to talk about the candidates and the candidates' position. And my children, one of whom is in eighth grade, has in class been called a baby killer because she had the nerve to express the fact that a portion of Barack Obama's platform needed to be examined in a different way.
So,
the self-informing nature of this insular society is making divergent points of view almost impossible to express.
Alice, is this something then that the next time you're transferred that you'll give some thought to the politics of the neighborhood you land in?
Hopefully we won't be transferred again, and it won't be a corporate decision as to where we live, but much of the landing spot that you pick in a corporate move is not informed by anything other than the resale value of the house you choose.
Thanks so much for your call. I definitely want to get your response, Bill. We'll do so after the break so that you'll have adequate time to talk about what Alice just told us. My guest is Bill Bishop. He's a former special projects reporter for the Austin American Statesman. His new book is called The Big Sort: Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Bill Bishop. His new book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. If you want to join the discussion, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So before the break, Bill, Alice was talking about the effect that this seems to be having on her children who have landed in a place where their classmates do not hold similar political views.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and you can see what happens to people who are in the political minority is that they shut up. They're less likely to take to vote. They're less likely even to engage in civic activities. I talked to all sorts of people who, when they knew that they were in the minority, would at book clubs or bridge clubs, they would just keep their mouth shut. And the situation Alice described was her, it sounded like Democrat-leaning children were getting grief at school. But it was interesting. I just got an email from someone at the University of Maryland, and they had received an email from the dean of students, of undergraduate studies, that said that conservative students on that campus were being made fun of, and their life was being made hard because of the views that they expressed. So it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. We might imagine that a group of people with the same party affiliation who hung out together all the time would then differentiate among themselves, that you would have some more liberal and some more conservative and even apathetic members within the same group. And we'd assume that they would notice nuances between each other. But in fact, you find that the membership in a group like that has a very different effect. Can you talk about that?
Well, there have been hundreds of experience in the phenomena of what's known as group polarization. And what happens when people think alike and are in a group, they become more extreme over time in the way that they think alike. So one example of experiment was some French students who disliked the United States were put into a room, and they were asked to discuss the United States for a couple of hours, and when they came out, they disliked the United States more. And that happens over and again. And what happens is that people want to be seen as a good member of the group, so they become, in my neighborhood, they become slightly more democratic than the average. So in my neighborhood, again, it's not enough to say Bush should be defeated. It's that Bush should be indicted. Bush should be impeached. And if you say things like that in a heavily Democratic neighborhood, then no one will mistake you for a Republican. So you go back to Alice's situation, and the kids who call her children baby killers are being good conservatives, I presume, and no one will mistake them for a Democrat. And over time, that just pushes people to the extreme.
So one of the places that it would seem we can't shield ourselves from people with really different views is at work. People come from all parts of a city or of a region. How does this political polarization play out there?
Yeah, I think that's an important point, Chris. And work is the sort of last refuge of political diversity. And it is the place where we rub up against people who don't think like we do politically, and except maybe Thanksgiving dinners. So it's interesting. There's some Target Corporation has meetings of people to talk about public issues at their headquarters in Minneapolis, and maybe we need to do more of that. Maybe that's the place where we relearn how to be good citizens.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next to Brian in Wiley. Hi, Brian.
Hi. First, I wanted to validate, I guess, the comment by the previous caller in terms of the level of discussion in schools. My son had the same experience. I can't say he was called a baby killer, but the discussions, this is a junior high school, got heated to the point that they were just stopped in the classroom because they were getting out of control. But my main point for calling was I moved from the Northeast recently, and it was purely an economic move, and it was purely by choice. But one of the benefits I was hoping to get out of it, and I've seen some of it so far, was exposing my kids to a different part of the country. I mean, we lived in the Northeast, and our family was all up there. And by bringing them down here, let them be exposed to different attitudes, with the idea that there is something that still makes us Americans? Because that's my fear, is that if you ask the question, what makes us Americans, it's, at some point, as the polarization continues, we may not have an answer. And I'll take my comments off, or your comments off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for your call. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I mean, that's my fear too. Is that we have, and you know, we can see it in government. We don't see it as much in the Texas legislature, although I think we're going to. But we have representatives coming from different places. Different island, almost island communities of belief, and they see no reason to compromise. And so in Congress now, there is the middle, the people who vote want, you know, sort of go between the parties, those people have just disappeared entirely. There is no Democrat now in Congress who is more conservative than most liberal Republican. And so there is, you know, what is that common thing that as a result in Congress, it's hard to get a compromise because it's for the same reasons it's hard to get a consensus in the country, is that we just fundamentally disagree and we don't want to hear the other side.
We have an email from Donnie who says, your argument seems to be that class, race, and experience are easily reduced along the lines of the two major political parties. What about those of us who don't identify with either vaguely defined political philosophy?
Yeah, I don't think it's class, race, or... It's not those old demographic factors that split the parties now. It's more way of life. And if you find yourself really in the middle, then you are a rarity. Since the 1970s, part of the big sort is that those people who truly do vote one way one election and one way another election has been that number has been decreasing for the past 30 years.
What about, for example, I know, and we had this issue when we had the call earlier about someone moving from the Northeast. Mm-hmm. I know liberals who would never consider moving to a place like Dallas or its suburbs. I know conservatives who imagine that it would be horrible to live in San Francisco or in Austin, for that matter. But clearly, though, there are people in both places that they could find to agree with. Can you talk about how the reputation of a place kind of intensifies that sorting?
Well, it does. I've talked to people at the University of Texas who have had trouble recruiting people from the Northeast or from California to come here because they don't want to live in a place that they see as too conservative for their blood. And people do. You talk to kids these days, I just say, I used to go through an involved question, but now I just say, what's on your list? And they know exactly what I'm talking about, and they have a list of cities where they think about living, and they have pictures in their mind of what those places are like. And people move to Portland, Oregon, because they want to ride on great public transportation. And the fundamental difference in America today isn't the state, it's the city. And cities are where it's at. Cities are where new cultures are being created and new economies are being created, primarily because that's where we are building up these majorities of people that can act and do their will, whereas at the state or national level, we're kind of stymied.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to James in Dallas. Hi, James.
Hi. I've heard on NPR, another show, someone was talking about this same phenomenon, this sort, and they argued that it led to better representation in Congress because conservatives formed into conservative districts, and liberals would live in liberal districts, and they would get to elect the type of representative that represented their interests the best. And I was just wondering, you know, since someone always has to lose, what's the big deal? This is the whole thing with democracy, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, without being Clintonian, I guess the question is, what does better mean? And I think James is right. If better means having a representative who more closely aligns with you, then this situation works. If representation means finding people who, having politicians who are good mediators between the various factions that make up the country, then it's worse because politicians no longer have to do that kind of mediating work because they don't represent more than one faction. They represent the one faction that James talks about, and their job is to maintain that, you know, that point of view. But that's not what democracy is supposed to be about, people getting together and finding a better solution out of a variety of opinions. And in the situation we have now, we may have better representation, more accurate representation, but worse government.
So, Bill, what is discourse like in parts of the country, and there are about a third of them left, where politically passionate people might live side by side with others who are equally passionate about a different philosophy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, voting turnout is higher there. And, you know, I don't live in one of those places. so I don't know. I wonder, you know, is the quality of life different? That's a good question.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Katie in Denton. Hey, Katie.
Hi. And the call before me was interesting because I was going to say almost the opposite, that I live in Denton, and my husband and I are very interested in independent music and in art, and we're glad there's a university there. And so sort of as a result, we end up being with people who are the same politically as us. But our county is very conservative, which is not the same as we are, and our elected officials are actually not really representing us, but we kind of don't mind because the people we end up spending most of our time with are the same as us. And I'll just take comments off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, people find their group, but what's interesting about Katie's comment is that politics was defined as an interest in art, and that's what I mean by lifestyle choices are aligning with politics. I mean, she didn't say, I found people who are believed like I do about single-payer health plans or, you know, Obama's tax policy. It's I found people who agree with, you know, who I can talk to about my interest in these other things.
Of course, not everyone, either conservative or liberal, worships at a standard sort of church or mosque or synagogue. But I wonder if you could talk about the effect of religion on all of this.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things that happened in 1965 was that mainline churches, Episcopalians, Lutherans, began to lose membership. And what took their place then were the larger churches, the mega churches, the non-denominational churches, the Saddlebacks in Orange County, the Second Baptists in Houston, that were built along the lines of what is literally known as the homogeneous unit principle of church growth, which is we're going to build a church that caters to a certain kind of person.
This was deliberately done.
Deliberately done, and most churches now work this way. And so the church reflects the lifestyle, therefore the church reflects the politics, and therefore the church has become extraordinarily segregated politically. There's a phenomenon, though, that really interested me among kids, and that is we have a generation of people who grew up in mega churches who are now reacting against that. They don't like the size. They didn't like the sort of what one kid told me was a thou shalt do this and thou shalt not do that nature of the mega church. And there's an emerging church movement of smaller churches, very biblically oriented. But people, kids who are interested in the grayness of life and seeing both sides of the situation, and that to me was the most hopeful movement that I found in the country. It was the emerging church.
Let's go next to Daniel in Dallas. Hello, Daniel.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
My question is, do you see people who try to gather with others that believe what they do so that they don't have to argue or have their ideas challenged? They're essentially hiding among the herd.
Oh, sure. Yeah, people hate to argue. Americans especially hate to argue. Diana Mutz, there's a great book Diana Mutz at Penn put out called Hearing the Other Side, and she finds that Americans like to talk about politics as much as anybody in the world, but they're the least likely people to have discussion mates who have opinions different from themselves. And it's because argument, clearly the calls that have come in, we don't do argument very well. If we can't hold a discussion in a in a classroom about civics without closing it down, we've lost the ability to have a discussion, and that's kind of sad.
Well, I wonder if that's part of the problem, that it's not part of our tradition to argue in a way that is civil and respectful of both sides. And it seems to me that that is a reflection of mainstream media these days.
Well, it is. Maybe did the media teach us how to be bad citizens, or did the media just sort of find niches of people who, I mean, when Rachel Maddow can go on MSNBC and immediately double her viewership, the viewership of the channel, just by being kind of snarky and opinionated, did she do that to people, or did...
They were just waiting for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Bishop is my guest. His new book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. An email from Ellis in Dallas says, James Madison in the Federalist Papers wrote that a congressional district should be large so that no one particular group, political or economic, should predominate but reflect the interests of the community at large. It sounds like maybe that's it's not large enough anymore.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, the founding fathers worried about this situation a lot. And in fact, one of the things that came up at the time of the Constitution was whether local districts should have the right to instruct their representative. Should the local district be able to tell their member of Congress exactly how to vote on a particular issue? And that was not included in the Constitution because people felt it was important for those representatives to go to Congress, hear other people's ideas, and be affected by those in order to come to the best solution.
Bill Bishop is with us. The book is The Big Sort. We'll be back in just a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send email to think@kera.org, or you can call us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Bill Bishop. His new book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org. Bill, the closest we have gotten in about a century to having a third party sort of rise in this country was Ross Perot in the 80s. I'm wondering, or the early 90s, forgive me, and I'm wondering if you think that that will ever be possible, or what would have to change about the way we exist right now for a third party that might take ideas from both the left and the right to do well enough to win a major election.
Boy, you know, there are some political scientists who can talk about that better than I think it's sort of the way our electoral system is set up. It's hard for a third party to exist. And I think this is why in other countries with more parliamentary systems, you may not have this kind of absolute neighborhood by neighborhood alignment. But when I think we're stuck with two parties. I mean, I think that's what our 200 years of existence has shown us.
As opposed to the European system, where you might have liberals and you might have conservatives, but they've got independent interests within those parties.
And rural parties and labor parties, and you have multiple parties.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. David in Fort Worth is on the line next. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks.
Good, good. I'm glad you guys got on this topic because it brings something up that I've been thinking a lot about. I still have a residence in Missouri, which is a battleground state, and I choose to send my vote absentee because, you know, in the state of Texas, I just don't feel like, you know, my voice is going to be heard or it's going to matter. And I know I've talked to a lot of people that are maybe from Ohio or Missouri or Nevada or something, and they do that if they still have a connection to their home state. And it brings me to the point of now, looking at this election kind of at the macro level, is it really helping the country to keep the Electoral College? It seems to me that really all it does at this point is label you conservative or liberal or blue or red. And to me, if we just went strictly by popular vote, you can have your different parties, but vote popular vote, see how it turns out, and then analyze it later. If you analyze the heck out of it like we're doing now, a lot of people that maybe wanted to vote the other way simply don't show up or aren't interested because so much is predicted by the polling in these electoral college states. And I'll take your comments off the air, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, boy, I sort of swing both ways. I mean, they're running ads in North Dakota and Montana now, which I like. I like the fact that candidates have to go to some of these low population states to see how rural life is lived, and I don't know if that would happen if there weren't an electoral college. On the other hand, no one comes to Dallas or to Austin or to Houston, and that seems kind of crazy too. So, I guess I'm stuck on the Electoral College. I don't know.
Yeah, I was watching Meet the Press the other morning, and I think there was a mistaken graphic where they temporarily labeled Texas a battleground state. And I thought, wow, something has changed, and maybe that both candidates will come here and they'll talk to us. But I think that was just
some buses from California must have arrived.
Yeah, they were driving through town. Yeah, exactly. Let's go next to Ron in Fort Worth. Hey, Ron.
Hi. Well, good afternoon. I appreciate you taking my call. I was interested in your views as to the degree to which misinformation is distributed as a result of negative political ads exacerbates the progression of this political polarization of America. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. So I guess people hear something negative, and they tell their friends, and then they're all spun up.
You know, I think a bigger barrier is the way we shape what we hear in our own minds to reinforce what we already believe. And two people on opposite sides of a situation watch the same news report, and they see entirely different events. And the bigger barrier to sort of good citizenship is our ability to, once we've made up our mind, is to shape every event, everything we read, everything we see, as proof that our position is correct.
Well, and the point that comes through in the book as well, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, is the fact that we may not, in fact, view the same news report or read the same news report,
right?
because we tend to choose, especially now with the Internet, very specifically the sources of information about what's going on in the world.
Right. And that was a phenomenon that began in the 1990s when Republicans stopped watching the State of the Union address when Clinton was giving it, and then Democrats stopped watching when Bush was giving it. So, yeah, we don't like to have our beliefs challenged.
What do you think about this next generation that we keep hearing is less concerned with race? They are when they're adults, less politically ideological. They can see sort of pragmatic solutions to things. Is there a possibility that as they come of age and move around the country, that they won't consider the same things when choosing a neighborhood that we do?
Yeah, you know, I keep thinking that. Or they won't consider differences as being something that's wrong. I guess the two callers who talked about the sort of tough times in the classroom sort of chasing me on that, on making that claim. But it just in hanging around with the emerging church kids, I saw that directly, that maybe this is a baby boomer exercise, and baby boomers are just extraordinarily obsessed with right and wrong and left and right and good and bad, and that the new generation will be, you know, will have a more nuanced and more accepting way of thinking. And I certainly hope that's true.
Let's go next to Azel and speak to Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I guess I'm the exception to your rule. I've lived 15 years in southern Utah and the last 12 years in North Texas as a lone liberal. I don't think I've ever met any other liberals in any of the places that I've lived. And it's real interesting. I find myself self-censoring a lot because
I just feel like it's not even worth the effort to try and educate somebody to a different point of view in many cases. And I'm hearing a lot about population density. One of the reasons why I live the places I do is because I just can't handle the feeling of large groups of people around me all the time. And it seems like the more liberal places in the country tend to have a lot more dense populations. And if you found any factors that relate to that, and I'll just take my answer off the air.
Interesting point. Thanks for your call.
Oh, I mean, Kevin is absolutely right, and this is another phenomenon that's changed. In 1976, there was really no difference. But over the years, there's become an increasing difference. So I think the counties that voted for Kerry in 2004 had about 900 people per square mile, and those that voted for Bush had about 100. And so population density is absolutely, I mean, there's just a straight line correlation between population density and the vote. And people know it. Kevin knows it. And I had a Republican precinct chair in Minneapolis just tell me, the way you tell the difference between a Republican place and a Democratic place is you measure the distance between people.
We have an email from McCall who says, I really enjoyed the book and its in-depth examination of people's tendencies to cluster. I live in Keller, a place I consider to be extremely conservative in every way. I would have characterized my political and social beliefs as moderate or centrist, but in Keller, I am a flaming liberal. I find that living in this community for 20-plus years has made me more liberal and engaged politically than if I had been among like-minded people. Is that typical in your research or atypical?
Well, yeah. I think that I don't know about the change in personality, but I can tell you that, yes, that the meaning of what it is to be a liberal changes from place to place. And evangelicals in blue counties were against the war in 2004, and in red counties they were for the war 3-1. So your surroundings do... The meaning of political meaning changes from place to place.
Now, you've said that you live in Austin, and I'm going to assume that your politics tend to be liberal.
Yeah, I vote for Democrats. I'll vote for Obama.
So, as you wrote this, did you think to yourself, "Well, I'm sort of wishing everyone else would mix it up, and I'm here comfortable in a liberal neighborhood"?
Yeah. Oh, I feel terrible about it. I mean, my wife and I used to own the newspaper in Smith. In fact, I'm out in Bastrop County right now. We used to own the newspaper in Smithville, Texas, small town. I'm from Kentucky. I used to live in the coal fields of eastern Kentucky. And, in fact, we really feel like we had a more diverse life when my wife and I lived in Smithville, a town of 3,500, than when we live in our hip little neighborhood in Austin in a town of 1.8 million. And so we're thinking about moving out to a smaller town where we can hopefully regain some of that diversity that we've lost in our neighborhood.
That's very interesting. I guess at some point, if it's a small enough population, different things start to rise to the top of importance.
Well, you begin to know people on a variety of levels, and you know people from all walks of life, and people aren't defined so flatly, and it's just a richer environment that I've, at least for us.
Let's go back to the phones and this time speak to Jason in Dallas. Hi, Jason.
Hey. I was just curious as what your opinion was. If you think the division between the two political spectrums is a real division or if it's something that's kind of been manufactured by the parties. Because, you know, if you have like 10 conservatives in a room and you ask them about one issue, they probably won't all give you the same answer. That's really my question.
Yeah, I think the issues, I think the divisions are real, and I think it really comes down to sort of fundamental ways about the way you see life, the conscientious personality versus the open-to-experience personality is one way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it in the church is the church there to do good works in the community, or is the church there to save individual souls? And are you responsible for your own salvation, or does your salvation come by doing good works? And I think those sort of basic, think about it. In the 1980s, reducing the deficit was a Republican issue, and now it's a Democratic issue. And so issues go back and forth. But I think these fundamental differences in the way we look at life and how we want to live are what define us.
Is there a way to encourage people to sort of encounter others, those who are not in a position to move to a smaller town and get to know people on a variety of levels? I do think that, you know, every conservative I know has a couple of liberal friends and vice versa. And they sort of hold that person in a different category in the same way, frighteningly almost, that people used to talk about race.
Huh.
And I wonder if you think there's a way that we can sort of bring people together that's not just ridiculously artificial.
Yeah, and I think this gets back, Chris, to what you said earlier about work. I think work is the place, and the question is, you know, and I think employers can actually find it beneficial to get people from different parts of their organization together just to talk about stuff, you know, an election or an issue in the community, and to find a way that people can create connections that don't exist out in the other parts of their lives.
It's funny, though, because I would imagine for some people, announcing their views at work feels really risky.
Well, it certainly would. Yeah, I mean, they can worry about what their bosses say. You know, we almost have to rebuild trust and rebuild that civic commitment to ideological diversity that's missing. And that's a big task.
What's the worst thing that could happen if this trend continues and if we completely separate ourselves into quadrants of people who are to the right or to the left?
Well, we just begin, you know, national government and state governments become less important and local governments become more important. And so the big national issues we don't act on. And, in fact, we haven't acted on over the last 30 years. We have yet another energy crisis. We have a continuing health care problem. We've got, you know, environmental issues that we, you know, we just are unable to act on any of the big problems. Whereas locally, you know, we do things. We just become less of a nation and less capable of competing as a nation and as advancing as a nation. And, you know, it's just more of the same, I think.
Do you think most Americans want to understand people who don't have the same views that they do, or do you think most Americans want to convert those who don't have the same views?
You know, I think conversion is a big goal of ours, and especially the more educated we are, the less likely we are to have discussion mates of different opinions. We almost use our education to isolate ourselves among people who think like we do. But, you know, wanting to hear the other side means that you have to believe less strongly about what you think.
Bill Bishop is a former special projects reporter for the Austin American Statesman. His new book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Bill, fascinating topic. I really appreciate you spending the hour with us.
Thank you, Chris. Great callers.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.